Hey gang, Dre Harrison here from the Motorsport 101 podcast, coming to you from the future, or post-production, however you want to describe it. I just wanted to get a quick apology out on this one, because this episode of the show, based on Formula E in Cape Town, was filmed right after it actually happened originally, but got pushed back down the schedule because we wanted to take priority towards other series we cover, like Formula One and IndyCar, as well as all of our season previews around that sort of time. And we kind of took advantage of the fact that Formula E conveniently was in a one-month hiatus at the time. Sorry if you're a Formula E fan and you've had to wait a long time for this episode to come out. It won't happen again. It's just been a bit of a nightmare behind the scenes organising everything. Thanks for your patience and your continued support, and I hope you enjoy the show. Guaranteed to be completely friggin' bonkers. Because what else? It's Formula E. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Sometimes I just haven't got a witty joke for how bonkers this series can be. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 422 of Motorsport 101. I am your friendly neighbourhood host, Dre Harrison, and with me as ever, because we've done double duty this week, we're a close-knit family here at Motorsport 101. RJ O'Connell's here. Hello, RJ.
Hello.
And we've also got Cam Buckley. Hello, Cam.
Oh, I'm laughing all the way to the bank. 4 out of 5 wins, baby.
Even when Porsche was trying everything in their power to not win a Formula E race, they win a Formula E race. Like, I don't know how these guys keep doing it, to be honest with you, but
I am reveling in this.
It's like, I love that you were so despondent about Porsche at the start of this season, and now the series is about to take a month off, and Porsche have won 4 out of 5 and have first, and I think it's first and
it's that reverse psychology. It's that reverse psychology nonsense.
Oh yeah.
I realize I have been so jet lagged the last week since coming back from the UAE that I've had multiple instances where, okay, you ever like say something, you mean one thing, but the word that comes out of your mouth means something like completely the opposite of what you're trying to say. I've had multiple moments like this in the company of conversation with others, and I don't know how to feel about it.
Well, it's nothing about grapefruits.
Yes. The famous Vince McMahon line, I have testicles the size of grapefruits. I accidentally say I have grapefruits the size of testicles.
That just means they're not ripe yet, RJ.
Oh! Gentlemen, we're 4 minutes in. I mean, come on.
It doesn't take long these days.
Motorsport101.com.
Yeah, check us out for more testicular related jokes, honest.
Actually don't.
No, please don't.
Don't. I'm not doing so good right now.
In the words of Piccolo Dragon Ball Z, the balls are inert. It doesn't make a bit of
yo. Oh, dear. Okay, should we talk a bit about Formula E? Because Formula E had around... Oh boy, we had round 5 of the championship this past weekend in a brand new location, Cape Town, in South Africa. Bit of a buzzing weekend for South African sport. I mean, women's T20 World Cup cricket final. We had the 9 hours of Kalami, and then we had this big Formula E race as well. Good weekend for South African sport. Well, yeah. Kind of, given, you know, the women lost the final against Australia, and then Cape Town was a bit of a shit show, but...
But that's still okay, because both the Vanderlyn brothers raced this weekend. Sorry, what?
About that. There's a lot to dissect here in this one, including an all-time classic race that was decided on the final lap in extra time by Antonio Felix da Costa hitting one of the best Formula E passes ever. Good luck to us breaking down that one. And then we had two dramatic moments, one on track, one off track, one in qualifying regarding Edo Mortara and Sam Bird, and the other one involving, well, forecast pulling out of the weekend before we'd even gotten to a race. There's a lot to get into here, which is why we're going to get through the social media real quick, first and foremost, as RJ quite gracefully alluded to. Motorsport 101 for all your grapefruit-related needs. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter @motorsport_101, You want to find our personal handles, you can at Dre_WTF1, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917. You can back us on Patreon if you really like us as well. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. Let's talk Formula E in Cape Town.
To put this, to distill this whole weekend into a nutshell, this was everything awesome about Formula E and everything not so awesome about Formula E in one compact package. This was the race, Dre, that seemingly no one wanted it to win. So here are all the notable events, the rap sheet, if you will, of everything notable that happened in this race in order. Championship leader Pascal Wehrlein avoided an incident with another car by creating his own, plowing into the back of Sebastian Buemi on the first lap of the race and knocking himself out. Mitch Evans, for the lead of the race, getting a drive-through penalty for overpowering during the ensuing safety car. Mm-hmm. Jake Dennis would have been in position to close in on that championship lead, but then he got a drive-through penalty for overtaking under yellows. Mats Gunther, who was running top three all the race, crashed the wall, broke his suspension, and retired. First-time pole winner Sascha Fenestraz, who led an early portion of this race and was running a comfortable third, gets hit from behind and crashes on the final lap. And then we get to the battle for the lead. Antonio Felix da Costa, with a lead that he was building, misses his final attack mode with John Erik Vergne closing in on him. And you think, that's it. It's done. Only for da Costa to hit the mother of all sins on the final lap of the race to win it. Instant golden melon candidate. The second move of the race that he pulled at the same portion of the track. Trey, what'd you make of that? Incredible Cape Town race.
One of the best Formula E races ever, and some actual proof that the maybe, just maybe, the organizers of this series aren't completely brain dead. This was an ideal track for the direction of which Formula E is going.
Exactly.
We talked about a lot about this last year in Formula E, about how the cars were getting quicker and quicker, and the fact that maybe they were starting to outgrow their smaller custom-built street circuits that had turned races into processions on some occasions. Cape Town was the opposite of that. Cape Town was flowing, it was fast, it was just the right level of danger, and it forced even some of the most established veterans of Formula E history to check themselves before they quite literally wrecked themselves.
That's right. Not to mention, it's picturesque and beautiful.
Some of them didn't actually check themselves in time, which we'll get to in a little bit. But yeah, like, this was really a street track that flowed more like a permanent circuit.
Mm.
And it showed, because these cars just seem happier on a faster flowing track. It also meant that drivers had to take massive risks on the brakes, because we know tires aren't very grippy. That was the case before they moved to the current cinder block compound that Hankook provides at the FIA's request. But it meant that some of the qualifying laps we watched were just completely over the limit.
Oh, yeah.
Fenestraz's qualifying time for pole was oppo into and out of every corner.
I distinctively remember the first quarter final of the duels. He was blaming himself and apologizing to his team at Nissan for hitting the wall during his qualifying lap and still making it through over John Erik Vergne in the quarterfinal. It's a hilarious bit of radio. Find it on Formula E's Twitter account if you haven't seen it already. It's well worth the 40 seconds of your time. But yeah, this was, I mean, Fenestraz's pole lap was the fastest lap in the history of Formula E. Just over 95 miles an hour average speed, which for Formula E is turbocharged, basically, at this point. So yeah, it goes to show you that this is clearly the direction of where Formula E's teams and cars and drivers need to be going forward. This is exactly what they need to do, because this was excellent. I liked it a lot, and it led to some great racing, and it punished mistakes. That was a theme all weekend long, and it clearly caught a lot of drivers out, and that was a good thing. So I'm all for it in that sense. And yeah, this was a great, great track. And the series delivered on terms of action, you know, back and forth action up off the field. There was passes to overtake people. And da Costa figuring out he could go around the outside of not just Cassidy, but Vergne as well for the win. was just incredible stuff. Incredible action.
Hey, and remember when Antonio Felix da Costa pulled off the move of the race with about 8 or 9 laps to go? And then he did it again at the same spot.
You want to see me get nominated for the Golden Melon? You want to see me do it again?
Yeah. Well, we officially added him to the list on that one.
Yeah. I mean, echoing everything that was just said, this was a racetrack and a race structured in a way that made Gen 3 make a little bit of sense.
Mm.
Watching it, watching people race one another. God, Antonio, that move.
Bold.
Dear God.
Dev said after the race, he literally could not see da Costa in his mirrors. That could have been, I mean, it was literally inches from disaster. Da Costa sent it into a very narrow gap and just about found the way through. And it was a pass worthy of winning any race. It was absolutely incredible.
He had a tire screeching while he made the move.
The Flying Willendas walk on broader tightropes than the one Antonio Felix da Costa walked on to make that move on John Erik Verne, the final lap of the race.
Yeah, and what it ended up meaning in the championship context is that, well, not a lot, actually, for the Drivers' Championship, because Pascal Wehrlein, aforementioned death on lap one. Yikes. This is not how you defend a championship lead, Pascal.
And his first race as a new father.
The German commentary basically saying, I hope your kid wasn't watching.
At that age, he's not going to have cognitive memories anyway.
You'd hope not, given the move that was made. And to be fair, not entirely his fault with kind of a checkup in front of him, but still could have made better decisions there.
The most amazing thing out of that, by the way, was Sebastian Buemi going out to continue the race and scoring solid points. How does he do it?
He got ass packed on lap one and ended up not really mattering.
Let's not forget as well, he also had 2 crashes already on the weekend, and he had heat stroke. And all this in the same week, their legendary team boss, David Price, from the past, sadly passed away as well. It was a highly emotional week for Envision.
No kidding.
So Buemi was sick as a dog, had already crashed twice, and got hit in the race by Pascal Wehrlein and still finished in the top 5. As you do.
But hey, very, this is going to blow race. The championship wide open in favor of Jake Dennis, and then he picks up a penalty after already starting for the back of the field.
Yeah, basically ended up not really mattering in the context of the championship. Everyone else is closed up, and everyone else is so far behind anyway that they still have healthy leads. What it does do with DaCosta's win is maintain Porsche's advantage, Porsche's factory team advantage at the top of the standings.
Mm. 100%. It's bunched the pack up a bit, but given there was about 50 points between Dennis and Wehrlein and everybody else, there's still like a race back, which, you know, is good for those two, but their breathing room has absolutely shrunk. Especially with Jev getting back-to-back really solid results in first and second.
Remember how Jev said that that his car had no chance at winning Cape Town, and he almost doubled up?
Yeah, and he lost by essentially 0.3 seconds.
I love a good... we love some good reverse psychology here. I think the most important thing that we're missing is that Dan Ticktum overcame the cancel mob... to finish a solid sixth, his best result of the year.
Unironically, really great drive from Dan Ticktum.
Yeah.
May not like him,
Formula E,
but you have to acknowledge he had a good race.
Yeah, absolutely his best race in Formula E. That was a professional job from top to bottom, and he brought it home and brought him good points for Neo.
Big points for Neo, given the context of their fight, because, well... Two of the teams that they might be fighting at the bottom of the standings did not have a good weekend. In fact, they didn't have a weekend at all.
Get into that, shall we? Because this is one of the big ones. And wow, this was a lot. So after free practice 2 on Saturday morning, day of the race, there was a discovery on Nico Müller's Seat Cupra regarding their rear suspension. And they were analyzing and checking the amount of loads that the force of the loads that their rear suspension was receiving over the bumps and the obviously speedy parts of Cape Town. Basically, the Cooper team did not like the amount of force on their suspension. They share that same suspension with the Mahindra factory team, who also share their powertrains. They got together, and I think it was Frederick Bertrand, who's there at Mahindra, released a statement saying that all four cars are going to be withdrawn from the rest of the weekend.
Yeesh.
On safety grounds. They basically couldn't risk a major part failing during the race, obviously after 30 laps of potentially sustained force at full racing speed. So, yeah. It's a little bit of a sad one on the stat sheet as well, because Lucas Degrassi, who we're not exactly the biggest fans of here on this show, but he was the only man in Formula E history to have taken part in every single race in FE history until Saturday. Same for Mahindra, who have been named the same from the very start, and because they've missed that race, it means no team that has kept its name through Formula E history has ever done every single race either. So two streaks died this weekend as a result of Mahindra and Apt Cupra being unable to compete.
They entered, but they didn't make the start.
Yeah,
they
had to withdraw. I mean, we had kind of, to lay a little bit of background, these cars, much of these cars are spec. The parts that are not, of course, are the drivetrains and the rear suspension setups, which the teams execute themselves. And we had kind of warned before this season got underway in our season preview that this generation of car had a really compressed development schedule. There was not a lot of on-track testing done. There were not a lot of miles on these cars. And when there were miles, there were constant issues cropping up. We thought it would be the rear brakes because the fact that they're purely regenerative on these cars. There's no traditional brake disc or drum that you'd see in a production car.
Right.
But this is a bit more worrying because the rear suspensions on these cars, you know, phenomenal loads going through them. Even though these are relatively low grip tires, they still carry incredible corner speed for what they are. And the fact that there were components of the suspension flexing to the point where they were concerned about failure really speaks to just how undercooked this entire generation is going in, even though we haven't had a lot of failures going in to the first couple races.
Cam, I was thinking of something. What was the last time, other than Indy 2005, that we had like a whole team just pack up and withdraw on safety grounds? I want to say it was like Minardi at a Spanish Grand Prix in 2002 withdrew both their cars because their wings kept failing.
There was that. There was
the COVID weekend at Australia and F1, I suppose.
That's not on the teams, though.
No.
More thinking along the lines of, like, in 2014, while they were kind of in their death throes, there was a huge story that had come out that Caterham was reusing broken suspension components and rewrapping them with carbon to hold them together.
Jesus Christ.
And they got absolutely hammered by others on the grid, as well as, you know, obviously all of social media is like, what the hell are you doing? That's the closest thing to this kind of incident that I can remember, because the FIA did clamp down on that after the fact for very obvious reasons. You can't have a Formula One car driving around with major mechanical components being held together with the high strength equivalent of duct tape.
Yo, yeah. It's great for episodes of Just Rolled In, but it's terrible in the application of real world motorsport where there's so much more risk.
Yeah. It's not acceptable.
We will not know the full extent of what the full situation is until they get the cars back in the UK. Mahindra have said they're going to carry out a full investigation on all of the cars in question, to basically better figure out what's happening. They can't figure it out on the track. They're going to have to get all the cars back to the UK, and then they're going to carry out their own investigation to basically see if they can determine what caused it. But in any case, it's alarming It's everything that we can't stand about this series. It's everything that we warned you guys about in our season preview with Sasha, and how this whole generation has felt half-baked. Not enough testing was done, clearly. Portia were very open about how undercooked everything felt from this generation, and the fact that already...
They're the dominant team, and they're saying this.
Yeah, but the Porsche, who are now, like I said, the best team in the sport right now, were the ones before this season even started that were pointing out just how batshit crazy everything had been behind the scenes and that it needed to improve for Gen 4. And this was also the same weekend where the first conversations had started about Gen 4 this past weekend in Formula E. And also,
what happened to walking before you can run?
I mean, they're already thinking about having a, quote, evolution of the Gen 3 car, like a Gen 3.5, basically.
I mean, they had tried to do that with the 2s, and then, of course, COVID came swinging in.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, it's like, don't get me wrong, you always have to be thinking about your future when it comes to running a racing series that tries to be, quote, unquote, on the edge of technology.
Mm-hmm.
But you gotta dot your I's and cross your T's first before you hand in the paper. And I don't see it getting that much better because, like, we've got a month off, but that there's no on track time there. No. And certain things, like testing, is not racing.
Nope.
And simulating in a computer isn't testing either. You need real world miles on these cars.
I'm stunned, like, even with these big gaps, because there is some big gaps in Formula E's calendar. Why couldn't they subsidize another test? Why not?
Because FE doesn't have very much money.
I hate that you're probably right on that one. It's just...
In the context of what they are, I mean, it just speaks back to, and we'll get into a little bit more, because this was not the only ridiculous incident this weekend, although it happened almost concurrently.
Oh, yeah.
It just speaks back to the state of the series that there's just a lot of very basic things that are mismanaged and have a huge effect on the end product.
100%. It's just another blow in this championship's quest to be taken seriously. And a lot of people don't take Formula E seriously. And I remember... The week we recorded after Valencia, like, a couple of years ago now, and the embarrassment, like, on Da Costa's face when he came over the line on that race that almost the entire field ran out of energy, and just how much of a shit show it was. It reminds me of these sorts of days. Like, I mean, only 17 cars started this race, Cam.
Yeah.
17.
Yeah, they would have, Kyalami, they would have killed to have 17.
They would have bit your arm off for that. Oh, my God. The bigger thing for me is that think of how good this race was. The track was a riot. The racing was good. The action was good. And yet, over all of that is the shadow of mismanagement. I liken it to, you know, roll it back to NASCAR in 2018 when Chase Elliott, incredibly popular prospect and, of course, future series champion, ends up winning his first race. And not even 12 hours later, the CEO of NASCAR is arrested for drunk driving in the Hamptons with Oxy in his pocket.
Yeah.
No matter how good the product ends up, there's always something overshadowing it.
Yeah. This was the best Formula E race I can remember in a long time. And despite that, there's still a dark cloud hanging over this series because nearly a quarter of its grid couldn't take part in a race in a car that was deemed too dangerous to compete. No matter which way you slice it, that's humiliating.
Those are manufacturer cars as well. Yep. At least one of them. Mahindra do manufacture there. I mean,
yeah,
we're talking about works entries in a FIA-sanctioned series having a car fundamentally unsafe to race with. It's 2023.
In an FIA World Championship.
It feels like we should be past this.
And this is what, season 9 of Formula E now?
season nine, but I mean, again, it just rolls back to, you know, you do a big technical reset with these cars. They're all new top to bottom. And then you don't give these teams, and don't get me wrong, it's not all the FIA's fault with the current situation with the global supply chain. But if that's the case, you're still putting drivers' lives at risk.
100%.
Look, and when the basic, as Jason quite rightly puts in the chat, the base car is spec.
Mm-hmm.
Spec equipment, and these are not spec parts, but that should make it easier.
You should.
Spec cars, by and large, should be have one of their jobs be it's safe. In this case, they weren't.
Yeah, this series has to do better. There is no excuses now at this point. You're in your third generation of car, and we're still talking about basic mistakes. It's just embarrassing for everybody involved. And like, I'm glad Mahindra did the right thing and withdrew. I'm glad that they didn't even think about running these cars and taking that chance.
You should be happy that everyone walks away from this physically intact.
Yeah, exactly.
This track was fast enough. Your right rear suspension collapses. You're going in that wall hard.
Yeah.
Right, into that really fast left-hander to finish off the lap.
A reminder, Fenestrazzi's pole speed was 95 miles an hour on average.
That's pretty quick. Before we move on from this, do you think we're going to see another instance where a team sits out? Because I certainly hope not.
I hope not.
I hope not, but I think it will. If this wasn't discovered until halfway through the fifth round of the championship, what else do we not know about these cars yet?
Yeah, we thought the issue was going to be the rear brakes.
Like, yes, these cars need more testing. What do you do as a failsafe? Just send it back into Gen 2 cars?
It's not an option. But you moved the whole sport forward into a new era without doing your detail work.
Yeah, and they left it too late. They really should have pushed Gen 3 back another year. Really. But, you know, they couldn't get enough testing time in, and now they're all paying the price. Like I said, if it takes until halfway through round 5 to discover that your suspension has a fundamental safety problem, what else do we not know about these cars yet? Like, what are we going to find out when more and more mileage goes down on these cars that there might be fundamental concerns? I fear there's more we don't know about.
Yeah.
That's what really worries me.
And I don't want to be the person in the car that suffers that failure that gets to find out first.
No, because that's normally when we do find out about these things. And we're lucky it was discovered off the track and not on it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Should we move on to something that kind of weird and unsettling that happened, but wasn't necessarily an inherent fault of the Gen 3 car itself?
Oh, boy. More mismanagement.
Eduardo Martara in qualifying lost it on the last left-hand corner and crashed in the wall. And amazingly enough, there was no flag waved by the marshals until Sam Bird couldn't avoid Martara's wrecked car and crashed into it, leading to our fifth pre-race withdrawal because Sam Bird's chassis was too damaged. What'd y'all make of this?
Sam Bird and the terrible, no good, very bad FE season.
I think we need to just stop. As a friend of ours would say, we need to stop observing Sam Bird. If we just don't perceive him, things will be fine again.
I pretend I do not see it.
Exactly.
Just pretend that's James Collado in the car.
No, that's just mean. No, look, we say this because we all like Sam Bird. Sam Bird's one of the most genuinely likable people in motorsport, and he's a very easy guy to root for, especially me, given he's a fellow United fan. But he's an incredibly likable, funny guy, and we all appreciate him in this series, and we all know he's a damn good driver.
Speed has not been the problem this year.
No, it's just been everything else. This was a very unfortunate accident. I mean, look, Mortara hitting the wall, it kind of sums up his season, really. Mortara's had a dreadful time of it in that Maserati.
So he crashed, what, three times this weekend?
Yeah, he and Wemmy both binned it three times this weekend. Just
Jesus.
Just a horrible weekend all round for certain people. And Mortara, yeah, just lost it on that super fast left hander, virtually flat out. Lost the rear, smashed it into the outside wall. And then at that point, the red should have been called immediately. Because there was a car blocking the racing
on
line.
On a blind, very, very quick left-hander.
Right.
And you come out of that corner and he's right on the racing line.
Exactly. This should have been red flagged immediately. And normally in Formula E, if there's a wreck in qualifying, they do red flag it immediately. Now, I don't know how much of this was down to the fact that there was already probably a load of marshals in Kyalami for their 9-hour endurance race they had this same weekend. That's probably a factor that's played up into this, but you can literally see during the live session and seeing the replays of the incident, the marshals that were there just didn't quite know what to do with themselves.
There's a complete lack of urgency.
Yeah, just there is a dude who has crashed a car on the racing line on a blind left-hander, and then 10 seconds later, Sam Bird is flying around. He's lost the rear of the car. He's lost control at that point. And then
Trey, before we even get to that, there were two cars that went by and almost drove straight into Mortara.
Yeah.
They had to grab an armful of lock just to get themselves out of the way.
Yeah. It could have been even worse. Easily could have been even worse. And, you know, thankfully, both drivers involved were okay. As mentioned, Sam Bird's car was not. And it had to be pulled for the rest of the weekend because they couldn't fix the broken chassis in time because the race was only 4 hours away at that point.
Yeah, he backed it in, basically head-on gearbox to wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hit Mortara's car.
Yeah.
Parked on the racing line.
And I do wonder if the marshals had a proper sense of urgency and had watched the situation, if they even just pull a yellow in that zone, maybe Bird slows down enough to avoid that incident. Or any of the other cars that pass through Mortara's incident. Because as Cam quite rightly points out, two of them sped past at full racing speed in that qualifying session and only just avoided Mortara's car. It was a horrible accident. And it's another, and I don't like using this term now, because unfortunately, the incidents of F1 Abu Dhabi 2021 has now almost turned this phrase into a punchline that it shouldn't be. But the Fuman era of the series has made everybody look bad again.
Why would Michael Massey do this?
But we fixed stewarding, et cetera.
I thought we fixed stewarding. It's just... And we call it immediately. Because we hold, you know, big parties watching these races in our Discord. And everyone's just like, where's the yellow?
Mm.
And before we can even kind of get that sentence out, here comes Bird backwards as they just throw the red, basically when he's already on the way to the wall. It's that split 3 or 4 seconds that can make all the difference in the world. And in this case, it did. Not in a good way. I want to stop being negative about FE and I can't.
It's just a horrible look for all involved again. And again, this series has to do better. Like there's no getting around it. Again, this maybe isn't totally on the series organizers. Again, I think the marshals have to take some degree of responsibility here because if they're on the ball, this incident probably doesn't happen in its entirety. Yeah, Mortara.
But who's responsible for getting the marshals on the ball there? That's the other thing.
It is the series.
I mean, they barely got up from their chairs when the incident happened.
I mean, again, it's the series' responsibility on that front. And yeah, I know Formula E likes to use a lot of local volunteers, and that's usually great. But unfortunately, if they're not of adequate quality, incidents like this happen.
Mm-hmm.
The marshals enable us to go racing at the end of the day. And if they make mistakes like this one, you're endangering people's lives. There is no getting around that. I mean, I know they bear such a heavy burden to enable us to go racing in the first place, but you have to get it right. There is no compromise on that can be afforded. And again, this series has to do better. And it's such a fucking shame because, like I said, this was a 10 out of 10 Formula E race. Genuinely.
Absolutely.
This was
this is a genuine race of the year contender.
Absolutely. I came into starting to watch this race not knowing what to expect because I had just seen the news that Sam Bird would draw. So I pop in, I'm like, well, what do we get out of this? Maybe Fenestraz and Cassidy impress. Maybe we get some decent wrestling. Hopefully everybody comes out of it okay. And there was a little bit of messiness, sure, but once the race started and once we really got in the thick of things, you saw what's still great about Formula. You saw that there's plenty to look into. I saw these words from a friend of ours that said, Formula just needs to mature. Right now, it's like a boyfriend who won't grow up. And I don't need one of those on any number of levels, and they're not charming to other people. But it can do it. There's an essentially a good core to what it is. And I really hope that scrappy, brave thing reemerges. And so do I.
Well, again, we've been, how many years are we going to say it in a row that FE needs to take that next step to look like to be taken seriously as a world championship? There's a certain level of quality and expectation that has to come with that. Now, get your Formula One jokes in right now, the peanut gallery. But look at the Andre, we were talking about this in the context of MotoGP last night because their stewarding has been a whole mixed bag. And the mix horrendous. Isn't very nice. The mix isn't very nice. It's all bad in there, but it's
fucking
still mixed.
Dreadful.
But if the same spotlight was on this series as was Formula One, as is Formula One. Oh my God, the state of social media talking about it every weekend.
Oh yeah, like
it'd be uninhabitable because
it wouldn't just be pockets of hardcore racing fans that are going on about this. It's right. Everybody.
It's every couple of months we're having a new major incident of what the hell are you doing with this series
and calls for reform. I was going to say, like, look, I can't stand the cesspit that is Formula One Twitter, but I will give them this. They would leave no stone unturned when it comes to calling shit out. That's the one thing we're all university good at, calling out the bullshit that racing series often have to contend with. And if Formula E had even 50%, even 25% of Formula One's attention as a global motorsport series, this series
over the coals.
Like this, we'd have to peel them out from under the bus they've been thrown under by now. This is bad on so many levels, and yeah, even despite a genuine 10 out of 10 race, an all-time classic Formula E race, we're still leaving Cape Town, which should absolutely be a keeper on Formula E's calendars going forward forever, because this is a blueprint round for what this series can be.
This fills the hole in my heart that was left behind by Punta del Este.
And it still is so incredibly infuriating that we are still leaving here with a bitter taste in our mouths, because 20% of the grid basically couldn't take part in this race because they couldn't factor in how dangerous Cape Town would be on their suspension. And we had a major qualifying incident that could have been so much worse and that could have been avoided with better marshalling and better organization from the series.
Dre, only Formula E could give us a 10 out of 10 race and we walk away going, man, what a mess this series is.
Do you know how infuriating that is? It's utterly embarrassing.
Kelvin Vanderlinde was great on commentary. He shouldn't have been on commentary. He should have been out there driving in his home race.
It's like Jensen Button commentating in 2000. Like, this guy's great at this. Wait, why is he doing this again?
Right, because he can't race. embarrassing. We got
Don't
a little bit of
fuel at that as ballast, kids.
Yeah, like, ugh. A little bit of late news. Unfortunately, we had a feeling this might crop up as well at certain points throughout the year, because there is clashes with major parts of the World Endurance Championship and Formula E this year. Andre Lotta will not drive for Andretti at Jakarta, their doubleheader coming up later in the year. Our friend and yours, Dre Lotta, will be instead testing at Le Mans for, I think it's the Porsche Penske program, Cam, remind me?
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah. Going to kind of... The whole the whole of both the GTP or the LMDH and LMH sides are really in full swing now with full test programs ahead of the kickoff of the WEC season. So we're going to see some of those involved in Formula E getting quite a bit of, let's say, other work in the meantime during this big break. Because, of course, during this break, we have Sebring, both Sebring races.
Indeed. So he will not be taking part at Jakarta, but we have got a cool replacement. David Beckman is coming back for Andretti for that weekend, that doubleheader. So that's cool, right?
I like David Beckman.
He can drive.
Formula 3 race winner. Probably deserved better in Formula 2. Reserve driver for Porsche. It's actually a bit ironic because David Beckman is going to be at Sebring for the 1,000 miles driving for Hertz Team Jota. In an LMP2 car that they have entered because they don't yet have their Porsche 963 ready, which is due to be driven by Yiffe Ye, Will Stevens, and
Antonio Felix Acosta. And Tom Brady.
And Tom Brady, apparently. Who knew?
Future comedian Tom Brady.
Sim racing legend who, like me, is halfway through putting a wheel together.
Literally, like Cam Buckley is literally halfway through putting a wheel together as this podcast was recorded.
I bought a Fanatec DD Pro because my T300 died.
As you do. That'll do it for Formula E for a month now, actually. They're off for a month, all through the month of March. They'll be back at the end of the month for Sao Paulo, another new round on the calendar. Hopefully, we can leave it without, you know, all this.
Tearing our fucking hair out.
You know, I'm waving my arms, but I know this is not a visual medium, but I'm waving my arms saying all this shit, basically. So hopefully without all of that, we can actually talk about how fucking good the racing was for once, because Formula E can't make anything easy for us out here. Never. Not in a million years. Also, cool hire, I have to mention as well. Friend of the show, Katie Fairman, is back writing for them as well.
Yeah!
Hell yeah.
Damn good hire.
That's that good shit that they should be doing more of.
Yeah. All I will say is that my current employer should have done better to look after her, because Katie Fairman is a fucking gangster. And Formula E, put her name on their shit on the website, please, because that deserves some credit. Thank you. Right. Let's get out of here. Last time we were on youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter @motorsport_101, Twitter handles @Dre_WTF1, @RJ O'Connell, and it's @CBuckley917. Motorsport101 pod for our Instagram, website, motorsport101.com, Patreon page, patreon.com/motorsport101. Until next time, and God, next time what will be? Go time for Formula One in Bahrain.
Oh boy.
It's race week. It's race week.
It's raw sewage week. That's what it stands for, folks.
Yay!
They call it raw sewage week because that's what it feels like when you go diving into the scourges of registered trademark F1 Twitter looking for a tweet to dunk on. We could all do better and just not dunk on people
Just don't engage. They don't deserve your typing.
Indeed. But yeah, we'll figure that out next week. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley. Formula E, get your fucking house in order. Sayonara.
Later, y'all. Well, you might be an odd racing series, but I must say, you steam a good overtake.
You cape a good town.